Hi, I'm Abby Ellsworth. I'm a civilian interviewing law enforcement from around the country. My goal is to tell the real stories of law enforcement, the ones that don't make the news. Welcome to part two of my interview with Dexter Pitts. Dexter is an active patrol officer and has been in law enforcement for 15 years and counting. He started with the Louisville Metro Police Department, known as LMPD, and is now with a smaller agency in the greater Louisville area. Many of you know him as the author of I Am Pitts, Memoirs of an American Patriot, and his I Am Pitts podcast. Dexter is a decorated, medically retired U.S. Army veteran. In part one, we cover his time in Iraq in 2004 and the IED blast that nearly took his life and for which he was awarded the Purple Heart. We cover his personal struggles that occurred early in his law enforcement career, including his mother's suicide and his desire to end his own life. We also talk about why Dexter chose law enforcement and how he sees it as doing the work God meant him to do. Here in part two, we pick up with Dexter's departure from LMPD after 12 years to become a Border Patrol agent. It's a fascinating conversation about what the job really is, what the issues are, and why it was not for him. Then we get to 2020. Dexter talks about watching the news and seeing his city overtaken by riots and chaos. He felt guilty for leaving his brothers and sisters behind and wanted only one thing, to get back to LMPD to help them. He recounts what it was like to hold the line night after night, listening to the vile things rioters said and coming face to face with people who literally wanted to kill the police. Then we get into issues: defund, civilian review boards, race, the biased anti-cop narrative, and more. We end on a high note with Dexter's expression of his ongoing love for this profession and his hope for its future. So let's pick up where we left off with Dexter's choosing to become a Border Patrol agent. I do want to touch on Border Patrol and then come back to 2020.
Absolutely.
I have to believe that everybody thinks they know what a Border Patrol agent does, and pretty much probably no one knows what a Border Patrol agent does. I know you didn't like it.
Yeah.
But I know you had a lot of training, right? It was not an easy jump.
No.
What does a Border Patrol agent do?
this is how I tell people the border is. But you have certain points on the border that they have, like at NACO, there's a little post there. And if you want to come into the United States, you come to that little point there. They do their inspection and you come into the United States and they give you a pass and whatever. So that's actually manned by people, by CBP, the blue uniform people. So they're customs.
The C in that is
Customs and border protection. Yep. They are the blue uniform people. But they work the ports of entry. And then between those ports of entry, you have open border. And that is where the United States Border Patrol comes into play. We patrol those ports of entry and patrol the border. And like I said, those ports of entry, I mean, the distance between them is hundreds of miles. So you have Border Patrol agents that go out and you have sectors and you have the line where the line is just pretty much the border. So, I mean, you have different jobs on the line. You have rovers who they work behind the line and they kind of roll around and just look for stuff like things that might be out of place and they might chase groups. But you also have guys that literally just patrol up and down in their sector, just up and down the line. You get a tire, hook it up to your vehicle, and you'll pull the drag, because when you pull that drag, it smooths out all the dirt and sand. And if somebody walks across it, you can be able to see their footprints. But the people coming to the country, man, they wear these booties and it covers their tracks and footprints. So you have to be really good at tracking people and cutting sign. But there's also what they call sitting on an X in the Border Patrol, where they put you at a post. You're going to sit here. You're going to stare at this fence for 8, 9, 10 hours. And you don't move. Now, if you want, you can take off and go on a little adventure and track around that area, but you can't go far because they put those guys at points where there's a high amount of entry, yo. And so it was one of those jobs where, like I said, I'm an idealist. And so when I saw Border Patrol agents on TV, it looked like policing. And I had a buddy that was Border Patrol, and I remember watching the shows on National Geographic, like, bro, these guys are in the mountains chasing people, carrying rifles, yo, and doing all this cool stuff, rappelling from helicopters and riding ATVs. And I'm like, oh man, I was like, that looks so dope. And then I looked at the pay, like, bro, how much are they paying? What? To run around the desert with a rifle? I was like, bro, I did that for a lot less in Iraq. I mean, but like I said, initially when I got out of the Army, I always wanted to be a federal agent. The only reason I did not become a federal agent, because of my second ex-wife, she was like, I'm not leaving the city. I'm not leaving my family. I'm not leaving the church. So I was like, all right, I settled for being a police officer and I loved it. But I felt like I was missing out on something, not being a federal agent, you know, and I just felt like I had a larger calling than being a police officer, man. Like, I just had this urge to be a federal agent. Man, I wanted that prestige and I wanted that name and I wanted that money, you know, because at the time, like, we were paying, I think, like $1,300 a month for childcare. And I was like, man, if I get this job, I was like, you can stop working and come home and I'll just take care of the family with working on the Border Patrol. And so I remember taking the test and I failed.
Oh,
crushed my soul, man. And I was just like, man, that was at that point. I was like, God, why'd you let me fail this test? Like, I want this. And I was just so gung. I mean, I studied and I was on the task force at this point in time too. Yo, so I wanted the fugitive to be, I was on the fugitive task force. But, yeah. And I wanted
this
to be
a U.S. Marshal.
Yep. And I wanted to be a U.S. Marshal too. But I was like, man, the Border Patrol looks fun. I felt like the Border Patrol would be a good entry point, probably easier to get hired and just get my foot in the federal door and collateral. Yo, so there's like, say, there's crisis going on at the border. This is 2007. I think I took the initial test in 2015 and then I retook it in 2017. And this is when Trump was in office and they were like, hey, we need more agents on the border. So they put out this thing where, hey, if you're military and law enforcement, you don't have to take the stupid test.
Good.
So I'm like, what? And I'm just like, it's a sign from God. I'm like, yo, this is my chance. This is my time. And so I remember submitting, and I just knew I was going to get it. Yo, and then I got that call, man. And they're like, Pitts, you're going to be going to NACO Station, the Brian A. Terry Station in Arizona, which was the station I wanted because I was also inspired by the story of a Border Patrol agent, Brian Terry, who was shot and killed down in Rio Rico, Arizona. He was a Border Patrol special ops and he was killed down there. And I was like, I want to be at that station, you know, and Lord knows I got all that. And I shipped out November 5th, 2018.
He was killed on the border?
On the border. He was in Rio Rico, Arizona. They were chasing a group of smugglers, you know, and unfortunately lost his life.
Yes, I know his name. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I get down there and, man, tell you what, girl, that's the hardest training I've ever been through.
Yeah. And you didn't like it because?
Like I said, I'm an idealist. And so when I see something on TV, the way it's advertised, kind of gullible with that when it comes to like talk about like America, the flag and service. I'm like, hey, man, I'm all in. I'm all in. That's why it's called Memoir of an American Patriot. I'm all about serving the country. And man, I got down to the border and it just was not what I thought it would. Man, it was a lot slower than I expected. And because people don't realize the border on the traffic ebbs and flows and swaps between different parts on the border. So when I was down in NACO in 2019, in the middle of the year, there was nothing going on. I mean, we weren't catching people. And I just felt like I was out there chasing ghosts, yo. And it's just like, and I just missed the interaction with the public. And I just remember walking up and down the borderline and being cursed out in Spanish. And I'm like, man, like the Spanish portion was awful. Like I was like, I'm a black dude from Kentucky, man. I don't know no Spanish. And just getting cursed out in Spanish, yo. And it was just the way.
By whom?
Oh, the people on the southern border, the Mexicans and the smugglers.
Coming,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, yo, the puta. Like, I'm like, what'd he say? He just said something about your mother's. I was like, oh, word. You know? And it's the way the federal government operates in general. You know, it was such a different, just a different way of life. And I did not enjoy it. Like, I thought, like, when we were out on patrol, I was fine, like going through the mountains and stuff, like working and looking for groups. I was fine, yo. But when it came to just pulling the drag, just drive down the border slow, drag the tire, and then you got to drive back slow, looking for tracks, yo, and just sitting there on the X. And the worst part was processing. I had no clue. Like, they don't show you that in the TV commercials where you're sitting in pretty much inside the jail with the illegal aliens, yo, and you're processing their paperwork, yo, and it's just like, that's all you're doing for 8, 9, 10 hours. And they make you put your gun in a lockbox before you go in. And I understand why, because guess what? You're probably going to use it on yourself at some point. Because, I mean, it was awful being in there. I mean, and I just hated life. And then we still have to do post-academy test, yo, where if you fail the test, yo, like, guess what? You got to start the academy all over again, yo. And the pressure was just building. And I was just like, man, I hate this job, you know, and I tried to stick it out.
Are you actually arresting people? I mean, when they're swearing at you and saying these things to you, is it I don't even understand how it works. They come across the border and you arrest them or you process them. What actually goes on?
So it's pretty much a game of hide and go seek. So if you see like some footprints somewhere where there were no footprints, you start tracking them. And also, the border is heavily surveilled. I mean, there's cameras everywhere. You're like, and it's almost crazy because I still have all the markers on my map, on my Google Maps, where all the cameras were. But you'll be out on the border and they'll be like, hey, agent number such and such. Like, hey, we just saw movement on this camera by this post. And then you will respond to that area and the camera will walk you into where the illegals were hiding. Or there would be a sensor hit because there's all types of sensors over the border. Yo, and if a car drives over a sensor, you got to go and check that sensor to see what kind of traffic it was. I mean, they have trail cams. I mean, it's just, it's a very intricate system, you know, and like your job is to go respond to these sensors and just look for people. And we would catch people periodically, you know, and like we catch them out there in the desert hiding. We go track them with the canine, you know, and just, and then you detain them. And I remember the first person I caught, I took them, I pulled out my handcuffs, I put their cans behind their back, put them in handcuffs. They just like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm arresting them. What do you think? And he was like, you were a cop before, weren't you? I was like, yeah. He's like, that ain't how we do business here, buddy. Like, what are you talking about? He takes the handcuffs off. He takes the guy, tells the guy, takes his shoes off in Spanish, takes all the laces out of his shoes, yo. And he's like, there. I'm like, what if he's running? He's like, brother, he ain't running out here without shoes. He's like, this guy's been trekking through the desert for days. He's hungry. He's thirsty. And he's probably going to die. And he knows it, yo. He's not going to run. Yo, so I was just, it was wild, man. And the one incident that really kind of, two incidents that really kind of broke me was we had a, I guess it was a civilian that hated the Border Patrol. And this guy was just bothering us and harassing us, telling us he's going to do all this stuff to us and shoot us and kill us, yo. And I'm just like, you can let this dude threaten us? I was like, oh, no, player. Oh, absolutely not. And I'm made ready to go in like contact with this guy and start being a cop. And it was like, Agent Pitts, step back. You're an immigration agent, not a police officer. Yo, and I was just like, whoa, what? So I got a gun on my hip and credentials, but I'm not a cop. Yo. And I was just like, dang, I did not like that, man. But there's also one incident that broke me was we were on patrol. We're walking and I hear my my trainer behind me. He goes, oh, shit. And I'm like, what? He's like, you just stepped on that son of a gun. I'm like, what are you talking about? I look down. There's this giant coiled up rattlesnake I had stepped on. And this thing was sleeping, man. And that thing was so big. Oh my God. It scared the life out of me. And I was like, oh my God. Like my mind, I was about to die. Yo. So I remember I went out and bought these snake gaiters and wore them on my legs. And everybody at the station was like, scared, bro? I'm like, hell yes, I'm scared, man. I was like, man, God, put me back in the ghetto. I ain't got to worry about rattlesnakes in the hood. Yeah.
Well, right, before we leave this, I just want to say border and the people that you're dealing with are not just people trying to enter to, you know, claim asylum. It's also drug traffickers. It's gun traffickers. It's
everybody. Right?
Okay.
And that's why I'm so concerned with the country now, yo, with where, I mean, we were catching people from India and Pakistan back then. And the thing is, I tell people, man, they have this thing called gotaways where you're tracking a group and you could kind of, you know, kind of how many you're tracking, but you're not 100% sure. I mean, and then you just lose that group. And these people are now inside the United States, inside the interior. Mm. So like what they do is, Abby, the cartels will tell hire Americans and they'll give them coordinates, say, hey, go to these coordinates here on the border, like on the side of a road, and pick up these people. And so the aliens sneak past us, and they go to these coordinates, and this American driver will pick them up and will drive them further into the interior of the United States. Or they'll put them in a safe house somewhere until they realize that the checkpoints are closed down, and then they'll drive them up into the United States. So it's a giant operation. I mean, it's huge, man. It just opened my eyes to what really goes on down there and how many people sneak into this country without us knowing. Because, these dudes are elaborate. I mean, they cut a whole section of the gate off at one point in time and drove an entire vehicle through it. And there's sections on the border where there's no fence. And you could just literally walk into Mexico or walk across to the United States.
So at this point, you decide you don't want this anymore. You are seeing the news reports from Louisville of your city burning, rioting, you know, and your brothers and sisters out there trying to deal with this. And so you you jump back into the fray instead of someone else who might say, hey, I don't want anything to do with law enforcement at this point, right?
Yep.
You jumped right back in. So tell me what you were thinking and what it was like.
Man, so when George Floyd broke out, yo, I was like, man, I was looking at Minneapolis like, that ain't going to happen in Louisville because, like I said, I've been on the SRT squad for years. I mean, we would handle protests and the protesters would come and do their thing, be stupid, lock their arms, yo, and then we'd kind of get rid of them, you know, but they went on about their way. And I was just thinking the character of Louisville and the people in Louisville, I was like, they're not built for this type of crap. Like, yo, hey, that's not going to happen here. And I remember seeing on the first night the crowd gathered downtown in Louisville, you know, and I was just like, it ain't going to happen, bro. It's not going to happen. I had so much faith in the city and in Louisville. And the next thing you know, I just see this giant rock on the news just come crashing in to the downtown area patrol office, where was my last assignment, the best job I had on the department. And I just saw that window shattered and I said, oh, crap. And then just chaos ensued. And I just sit there glued to my phone for hours. And my wife was like, you probably don't need to be watching that. And I'm like, I can't help it. I mean, I'm seeing the guys I knew and served with being attacked by just droves of people and being, I mean, and then there was one night where they got shot at. I mean, they were trying to, these protesters were trying to tip over a transport, an LMPD transport van. And then shots rang out. And then I see the guys that I served with on SRT running to help these people that got shot. And these people were trying to shoot and kill them. You know, and I'm just sitting there watching like, man, this ain't happening. And I just felt so much guilt for leaving them behind, you know, and I was like, man, I got to go home. And I just remember sitting with my wife in the front yard and I looked at our house. We had literally just bought a house there, not even 2 months prior. But I was like, I think we got to go back home, baby. She was like, are you serious? And she threw her full support behind me and she knew I was miserable. I knew I had to get back home. So I called my boy in recruiting like, hey, I want to come home. And he was like, are you serious? I was like, yeah. He's like, you see what's going on, right? I'm like, absolutely. Well, I got back around June 1st and I had to go through like a week of like reintegration and training and signing off on 2 years worth of policies that I missed. And so I finally got cut loose and FTO. I was I'd riding with the guy for like 3 days. They're like, bro, you've done this for 8 years, man. Go be the police. And so they cut me loose. And I remember the first thing I said was, hey, I want to get back on SRT. Like, you want to be on SRT again? I'm like, absolutely. And so they give me some gear. I didn't even have a police car at the time, the take-home car. So it was like one of the first big major protests downtown where the protesters took over the Second Street Bridge and they tied up all these signs on there and they put cars on the bridge and blocked traffic. So I drive down on my little Toyota Camry and everybody's thinking I'm like a protester coming through. And I'm just like, hey, it's me, man. Where you want me to park? And they send me to go park on the bridge in my personal car. You know, then I grab my gear and I get out and I'm standing there on the front line of the skirmish, man. And I just remember these protesters just came up to me. I mean, they just started saying some of the most evil, vile, and foul things a human can say to another human being. You know, I mean, it was awful, yo. And I mean, the tension was so high. You know, I mean, I've never seen the city like this, yo. And the crazy part was, like, downtown Louisville's usually busy. It was a ghost town. I mean, just the boarded up buildings and spray paint everywhere, yo. It was just, I felt like I was driving in Iraq that day. Like, because in Iraq, when an attack was about to happen, the inhabitants in that area would flee because they knew some bad things were about to happen, and people in downtown Louisville fled in droves because they knew bad things were about to happen. The only reason you were down there was to work or protest. There was no other reason, you know, and it was just so eerie being down there, man. Just, and I was so disappointed and let down by the city because I did not expect that from Louisville.
All right. Well, and so SRT is, again,
a special response team.
And so the SRT were the team responding to, I mean, I think probably it was all hands on deck.
Oh, yeah.
Right. But that's the unit you were in that was responding. And then not only did Louisville have the response to George Floyd, but within this time frame, also Breonna Taylor happened in Louisville. So I don't know if that magnified things. I mean, things were bad. I mean, they were bad here. Sounds like very much what you guys went through. I, of course, was not a police officer, but the things that were going on here, you know, they gave up the East Precinct, everything you talked about in terms of violence. So those two things, those two incidents coming together.
Well, and not just that, you got to look at, so we had George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, COVID, and then an election year. I mean, it was the perfect storm for chaos. I mean, it was awful. Like I said, I've never seen America dive into such chaos. And like I said, I'm only 40 years old, you know, and I'm just sitting here like, man, but like, what is happening to this country? And I've never been threatened to this level before for being a cop. You know, it was just every night. And the worst part is I worked downtown. So when I was not on SRT, like the protesters had set up a camp in the middle of downtown at the park. You know, and so
same here.
Yeah, it's just like every time I go on shift when there was not protesting, there's the people in the park and we couldn't do anything, man. And every night they would just come out in droves. I mean, every shift there was something going on, them testing us and wanting to see if us respond. And it was just every night. And I tell people, this was like a year and a half. Yeah. Every day, every night, protests. And I mean, every night I'm going home thinking somebody's following me. Somebody's trying. I mean, they told me all the time on the line. And it's people I went to church with and served with confronting me, telling me these things, yo. And it's just like, bro, like, what did I do to you, man? Like, I had nothing to do with none of this. And it's just crazy. And it's just people lost their minds with the mob mentality, yo. Then the one thing you don't want in law enforcement is a us versus them mentality. It literally became a us versus them mentality in a game of survival.
Yeah.
Literally what, I mean, I'm all about the Second Amendment. But man, when the Second Amendment is coming against you, and you have armed Americans, armed to the teeth with gear, vest, fully loaded ARs. Yo, and I tell people, like, what are you as a cop going to do? American citizens aren't the enemy. And these people are allowed to have these guns. Yo, and the thing is, I don't know their intentions, yo, but I just know they told us they was going to kill us. Yo, and just, you know, and these people, I mean, every day, yo, just every day, people rushing us with ARs as we're trying to arrest somebody. It was just nonstop. Right. Nonstop. My family felt distress. And like I said, I would drive down the interstate at night going home like 100 miles per hour with my lights off, pitch black, yo, trying to make sure nobody was following me. Then when I get close to my house, I would park like a quarter mile away, sometimes half a mile away. And then I would walk to my house or to my apartment because I wanted to know if somebody was following me. I was that paranoid. Most of us were.
Right. Well, they were trying to kill you. Then it was mayhem. I mean, I remember hearing an officer here, like in Seattle, every year on May Day, they would have protests, not riots. And so when this happened, I think one officer said it was like all of a sudden you turn around, there's 10,000 people and there's no order to it. They were everywhere and they're trying to kill us. It was, burning things down and it was insanity. But one of the things that you and it happened out here too is when you talk about the things that they were saying to you, not just because you're a cop, but for you it got personal. It was racist. They were saying horrible things. I can't repeat what you wrote. Correct. I mean, this was in the name of George Floyd and Black Lives Matter, and then they're Breonna attacking Taylor. You,
yeah,
and Breonna, and that, and you even say in the book that you thought back to your time riding the bus in seventh grade, which we didn't touch on, but all the abuse you took from these fellow Black students, these kids who bullied you, right? So it was kind of.
It's full circle.
Right.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I'm just sitting there and they're like, I'm like, man, they're categorizing all my white partners as evil racists, yo, and they're calling me a sellout. And I'm like, bro, I've been working with these dudes for the last 8-9 years and I've seen them save more Black lives than anybody else you could ever think of, yo. And I would always used to ask the protesters, like, I was like, hey, but outside of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, how many Black people do you know that have been killed by the police? I was like, personally, do you know? Nobody. And then I asked him, like, hey, how many people do you know from your neighborhood that's been killed by somebody that looks like you? Oh, man, well, that's little Day-Day, little Raekwon. And they could just name these names off on a list. I'm like, so you're telling me that we're more of a threat to you than the people within your own neighborhood? You know, I would ask some logical questions, yo. And for me, I got used to the name calling because after being a cop for 8 years, you just, like I said, you develop a callus and nobody can really say anything to get to you, yo. But I mean, just it starts to get to you because it's every day and daily. You know, you just at a certain point, yo, you just want to hit somebody in the mouth, but you can't because you have to maintain your professionalism, yo. But man, what got me the more than anything, yo, was just the whole year was so toxic with everything that it started to seep into the police department, the racial divide, yo. There were officers that started to divide amongst race, yo. Like, I mean, in the church, like I said, people I went to church with, served with, and prayed with were coming against me. And I'm just like, yo, like, this is not supposed to be this way. Yo. People that I serve with telling me these horrible things. I think I got a video on my Instagram page over a guy. Part I'm not going to say it, but he's like, F you, Pitts. And I'm just like, who's this? It's a dude in a mask. And I'm like, who is this guy? And he just say, hey, Pitts, fuck you, Pitts, fuck you. And I'm just like, I don't even know who you are. He's masked. And he pulls his mask up, and it's a guy I used to work with off duty at the club. Yo, like, we never had a bad altercation. And now all of a sudden, he's out here wearing this shirt with, like, blood on it, you know, talking about, you know, coming at the police. And I'm just like, man, what in the world? And crazy part is I ran to this guy about 2-3 years ago after everything. He was like, hey, what's up, man? Hey, how you doing? And I tell people, I don't forget any face. I don't forget what anyone said or anyone did during this time period, yo. And I'm like, hey, what was that about back in 2020, man? What did I do to you? Nobody can give me an answer. And he, oh, man, you know, it was just a crazy time. Oh, so we just cool now, bro? Like, we just going to let this sweep under the rug? Like, yeah. Hey, like, you didn't say all these things to me, yo. And it's just, I mean, it was just a crazy time, man. It's just so hard to describe, yo, just how divided and divisive the time was, you know what I mean? There was no place safe from it. I mean, cops need to decompress. Cops need to be able to get away from the job. But everywhere we turn in 2020, if you turn on your TV, protests, riots, Black Lives Matter, kneeling for the flag, ACAB, all cops are bastards. You cut on a football game.
I know.
Same thing. And then it's in the end zone, in racism, Black Lives Matter. Then I hop on PlayStation to play Call of Duty. We're in solidarity with Black Lives Matter. It was just everywhere. I go to church. Like, I stopped going to church at that time period because I was like, the only place I was safe was in my home doing nothing, you know, because everything was consumed by this virus that had broke loose in our country, this cancer. I mean, it spread everywhere, you know what I mean? I could not escape it. I mean, at a certain point, I've been put in the book that I had to get off my phone because, I mean, everything was all about race and Black Lives Matter. And the police suck, yo. And I mean, there was nowhere for me to escape to. Nowhere, yo. And it was just so draining, you know. And I mean, I despise the move because what it took from my family. Like, it literally took me from my family. I mean, overtime. And when I was not at work, I was on my phone figuring out what was going on at work. I was on my phone on social media, arguing with people whose minds I was never gonna change. And because, like I said, it just engulfed my life at every ounce of it, you know, and just, so we moved out of the city too, man. We, 2021, we moved out of the city. We not even in the state anymore, you know, so I live close by, but I don't live in that cesspool, you know, and it just broke my heart, you know, just, man, and people I had served with for years on the police department, you know, that all of a sudden lost all respect for me because I'm Black, Christian, and conservative, because I was like, hey, I like Trump. It was crazy.
People within the department?
Within the department. Mm-hmm. People with on the SRT team. There's a guy that he works in a small department next to me. Yo. He and I were on the team together. The great dude, yo. And I knew we had differences when it came to this stuff, yo. And I mean, he's a giant Black dude, enormous, yo. But I remember there was an incident where the Black officers were starting their own little Black club within the department and the FOP. And people know me. They know Dexter Pitts don't play. I don't do racial crap. I've been saved by plenty of white people, plenty of Hispanic people, plenty of everybody. I just see people, good character, bad character. Are you a jerk or are you not? Yo, and they were like, people knew I don't do Black functions because I don't believe in being a part of a group that's segregated simply by its color. I just want to be around good people, yo. But they invited me to this group of Black officers and they were saying, yo, like what they wanted from the department. And I'm like, this is the worst time to be fracturing and splitting at the seams within the department because the city is literally trying to kill us and we're going to make the divide worse. And I just remember leaving the group with some of the things were being said. I was like, I want no part of this. And that Black officer ended up leaving the department shortly after I did, yo. And he saw me at a Thornton's a couple, like last year, yo. And he was like, man, I just want to tell you, dude. He was like, I respect you so much. I'm like, why? He was like, everybody in 2020 bent. Everybody broke. He's like, you are the only black man I know that stood your ground against all of us and did not back down and has not changed since. He was like, I might not agree with everything you say or believe. He's like, but I can support a man that stands on his beliefs. And he was like, dude, against all of us by yourself, you did not budge. And me and him have been super cool and close ever since. Like, and I respect that dude so much because I mean, I felt like I was alone. I literally, as a black officer, yo, like people are expecting me to be this certain way and, you know, be a part of this group because I'm black. And I'm like, that's not what I'm about. You know, like, that's not what I'm about as a Christian or as a cop or as just an American. And I was just being pulled in two different directions, yo. And I felt like there were some white officers like, are you going to side with us? And I'm just like, bro, let's not get involved in any of this. How about we just be the police? And my biggest issue with 2020 was cops while in uniform, marching with protesters, taking a knee and kneeling and throwing up your fist. And I thought to myself, as police officers, we should not be doing this. We protect the people and the citizens of all colors, races, religions, nationality, class. We don't care. And I thought to, and I asked a lot of these guys, I was like, so if the KKK comes here next week and starts marching down the street, are you going to protect them too and make sure that their freedom, that their First Amendment is protected, even though it's against you? And nobody could answer, well, that's a different. I'm like, no, it's not different. That's why we're supposed to be impartial as police officers. We don't get bogged down in the trenches with all the bullcrap that the American citizens get bogged down in. We are amoral, but we don't have anything to do with any of that. It's you broke the law. This is what the law says. And there's some gray area, yo. But at the end of the day, we don't care who's calling for help. We just go help. And that's why I feel like the Louisville Metro Police Department lost its way because they got so ingrained in this diversity, equity, and inclusion crap, yo, and it has destroyed the department. And the funny part is the people that were part of this monster that they created are now trying to leave the department because this monster's coming back around and eating the people that created. You know? So be careful creating monsters because eventually it's going to turn on you. Monsters have no loyalty. No loyalty. And so it's the whole thing in 2020 was you're on the wrong side of history. You're on the wrong side of history. Well, we're seeing where history is 4 years later. And look at America, look at policing, and look at departments across the nation. Can you anybody sit here, listen to this, and tell me that America is better 4 years later after all this chaos? Do you feel safer in your communities? Do you feel safer knowing that there's less cops out on the street? Do you feel safer overall and in general? If anybody says yes, you are out of your mind and lying to yourself. Absolutely. And it just, like I said, time will tell. The truth has come out. Police departments are having trouble hiring. They're throwing so much money. They defunded us. And I had a guy said, go ahead and defund us. And he's like, we're going to try to warn y'all. Guess what's going to happen? You're going to have to refund us and pay us more. And guess what's happening? These departments are throwing children out so much money. Like, yo, we need people here. Recruitment bonuses, lowering standards because nobody wants the job. And so I beg the question, who right. was on the right side of history?
Right. Where do you think we are now? And where do you think we go?
Ooh, man, where do we think we are? I don't think we know where we are. Honestly, I mean, we got another election coming up. And I ain't gonna lie, I'm kind of nervous about this election. I'm like, man, everything's already so volatile. And we're still extremely divided. I see bits and pieces of common sense slowly trickling back into society, yo, but I just don't understand why more people aren't like, bro, this is horrible. Like, why more people are not in the streets like, hey, we want more cops. Like, let's stop this craziness. Yo, I don't know where we're at. And I honestly don't know where we're going. All I can say is I have faith in the God I serve and I have faith in myself and the people I serve with on my current department, yo, that no matter what happens, we're going to stand our ground and stand on the Constitution and ensure that people's rights are protected and that they're safe. I really don't know where we're going. It's scary thinking about it. I mean, you know, we're getting pulled into like, you know, the Middle East again. You know, and I'm just like, man, it's just so much going on. And all I can do is control what I can control within my grasp, which is, I don't like the thing we're doing now on TikTok because it's a different generation. And I don't like the whole TikTok cop thing. I can't stand it, yo. Cause
I know.
Oh my God. I tell you, it's almost like the old school minstrel shows back in the day in the 1800s with black folks. It's just like people tap dancing and shucking it. I can't stand it. But I tell people, but you're not going to make a difference that way. Where you're going to make a difference is how you respond to people in uniform out on the street, getting up and going and doing your job to the best of your ability. Because that one person that you disrespect while in uniform, you just put somebody on the other side. There's always going to be a gap in this between authority and the people. That gap is natural and will always be there because nobody likes being told what to do, but we have authority, you know, and so it's just, it's always going to be a natural bridge between us. And the best way to kind of just, like I said, you're not going to get rid of the gap, but just try to get closer with people is just by how you treat them and talk to them. No matter what they do and say to you, like just in 2020, the same people yelling and cursing us, we hate you, constantly stay calling, constantly start dialing 911. We coming to help. Right. We hate you. Then why are you calling? But every time you show up, you know, every time you show up, you treat that person like they're the most important person in the world. And more than anything, you know, abiding by the United States Constitution. Because I think we lost a lot of ground as law enforcement in 2020 by enforcing these horrible mandates that were outside of the scope of the Constitution. You know, I think we lost a lot of trust amongst the people. We did a lot more harm to ourselves in that time frame. So the people that you would trust us typically don't trust us now. But at the same time, I know that there's more people that are for law enforcement than are against us. That's evident right. Where I work at, man. Like I said, where I work at now, which is a couple miles from downtown, but it's a complete different world. I mean, I can't hardly pay for a meal without somebody thanking me for my service. And when I get that from my community, that just makes me go out and want to do better and be better for my community. That's the only way forward, is to continue to do this job. And I tell, we have to stop demonizing this job in front of the public. Like I hate when I hear a cop says, I don't want my kid to be a cop. This is the worst job ever. And I'm just like, man, if we're not doing this job, people of good character and integrity that care about the Constitution and the people, who's going to be doing the job? It's going to be the bottom feeders getting hired by the department that don't care about the Constitution or the people, but they're just doing it for a paycheck. That's going to hurt the people. When you hire low quality and you hire garbage, you are hurting the community. You know? So we have to elevate police officers and law enforcement at this point in time and treat them in a way. We have to treat them fair, hold them to a higher standard, but we have to treat them fair and judge them on what they do in the moment and give them the benefit of the doubt and let the investigation carry out. Unfortunately, everything with social media is a rush to judgment, and cops are automatically guilty. Right. And it's like I said, it's just a weird time, man.
And part of it, what's so hard is that every incident that makes the news, people immediately assume the police have done it wrong. No one believes in use of force. Every use of force is wrong. No one seems to understand follow orders and comply. Seem to have forgotten that part. Yep. And then so many of the incidents that you see end up being a black male suspect, often in the cases where they lose their lives, and then it's because the cops are racist. You know, and I struggle with why the conclusion is racism, and with the fact that these are the only incidents the media seem to cover, which creates this false narrative, right? And I believe that you've spoken about this and have an opinion on this.
Oh, yeah.
So do you think cops are racist?
Now, and this is what I tell people, we live in a fallen world. Are there racist cops? Absolutely. And when I say racist, I'm not saying white officers towards black officers. Trust me, I've talked to a lot of black officers. I'm like, bro, how are you even able to do this job with your perception of white people? Racism is a two-way street. Anybody can be racist. I don't want to hear the trope, black people can't be racist. Now, absolutely we can. Absolutely. Just get that out your mind. If you're in uniform and you treat somebody better or worse because of how they look, you're prejudiced and you're a racist, bro. And I mean, it's just that simple. You know? So police officers are people. We have bias. Everybody's got a bias. And sometimes it's uncontrolled, and sometimes it's controlled, but everybody's got a bias, man. But the biggest thing for me is, like I said, cops have to get down to the brass tacks of what we do. We serve the people. It is about the people. The people are black, white, Hispanic, Asian, gay, straight, Christian, Jew, Muslim. That is the people. And that is what we have to focus on at the end of the day. You know, and like, but we keep going off on these rabbit trails and we expect cops to be perfect. And my problem with the way society is, we hold cops to this high, unrealistic standard, but we don't hold society to any standard at all. And so we got the Dexter Reed shooting that happened. This guy literally on a traffic stop without provocation shoots a police officer. Cops fire back, kill Dexter Reed. And mom's on the air. They took my baby from me. And I'm like, well, he shot a cop. What did you expect to happen? But like I said, we have made victim culture. And that, and just, and I'll say, and for the Black community, has become so strong. And a lot of people aren't going to hear me say that, but it is so strong. I can't stand it. And I don't want no part of that, because that's not Black culture. That's not how I was brought up. And I know being Black in America is a different experience for everybody, yo, but that's not how I was raised, man. And when people tell me that when I buck against that perception of Black people, I'm like, that's a low bar, man. Like, we have to be better than that, yo. Like, we have to, at a certain point in time, take personal responsibility and accountability for our actions. And yes, are there effects, things today that happen in America due to slavery? Yes. Slavery's gone, but the ghosts and remnants of it are still alive and present. You know, like I said, America is not a perfect country. The past still haunts us here, but at a certain point in time, you know, we have to learn to forgive the past and move on, you know. But we are so tethered to what happened yesterday, you know, that we can't even make a better tomorrow. So yeah, are cops racist? Yes. Are cops biased? Yes. Are cops sexist? Yes. But yeah, I mean, you find me the most perfect cop and I'll find you a flaw with that guy, because that cop is a human. Like I said, we just have unrealistic expectations for cops nowadays. And what do you think is going to happen when we hire people that aren't suited to do this job?
Right.
You know, it's just. Right.
So the people that wanted to defund the police is punishing the police. The result is now going to be, you know, they lower standards, get more police. This training isn't there. They're going to end up with more crime. They're not going to achieve what they thought they were trying to achieve.
Yeah. And my other issue is the civilian review boards we got now. So let me ask you this, Abby. If you walked into a hospital today and said, hey, I want to sit on the board of this surgeon, this surgeon board for, you know, heart surgery. Like, man, what's your experience? I don't have none. I just want to be on the board.
Right.
They would laugh you out the building. But somehow, this is the only profession in the world where you can march in with no experience, say, I want to sit on the civilian police review board. And they'll be like, well, come on in, sir. No experience fighting, policing, military. You're just a person with feelings, yo. And they're gonna take you in there and take your word for it that, hey, these cops did wrong. Well, how do you know these cops did wrong? I just feel like they did. And I've listened to some of the people on the civilian review board, and I'm like, you're too stupid to breathe. How are you alive? And the bias in these people, there's one, there's one that I went to church with that's on the civilian review board here in Louisville, called me out on social media, treated me like garbage. And now I see her all the time because she's out there in the area I work in. She just acts like we're cool and like we're just friends now. And I'm like, no, we're not. We're not, but she's on the civilian review board and she hates cops. And it was a story down here. She literally said the worst things about LMPD. My partner stopped her a couple months ago and I told him, hey, you better write her homegirl a ticket right now, because if you don't, guess what? It's going to come back on you and it's going to look like you stopped them for no reason. You better write that ticket. And I can't stand the civilian review boards. People with no experience. Just people, you have academics that people have been teaching in colleges for years about law enforcement, but that ain't never been on the street. How are you going to tell me how to do my job? How am I, Dexter Pitts, who did go to medical school, going to tell this, you know, cardio surgeon how to perform an open heart surgery? It don't work like that. Some odd reason, police civilian review boards, man, this is how these cops should have responded to this active shooter that had a rifle. You know, it's insanity. Like I said, we've lost our minds. And I don't mind a civilian review board if you have qualified individuals on that board, military, prior law enforcement, you know, lawyer, you know, somebody that's given something with some sort of experience. But these people have no general experience. Make them go through a police academy, you know, make them go through a civilian academy, make them maintain a certain hours of riding in a police car on ride-alongs. You have to have that. Otherwise, you're out there with just looking at police videos, you know, in hindsight without the stress from the safety behind your phone,
right,
and saying that this cop is guilty and shouldn't have done this. Well, what should he have done?
Right. Well, in the Dexter Reed story, you mentioned, so he was pulled over for not wearing a seatbelt.
Mm-hmm.
And the officer tells him he's got tinted windows. I guess he has the window down and he starts to put it back up. And she tells him, you know, put it back down, get out of the car. He produces a gun. He shoots 11 times. Officer is shot. And so then officers have to return fire to stop the threat they are now being shot at. A lot of criticism about the number of shots they fired, 96. But it's a misplaced focus. It's not on why they had to shoot. It's how many times they shot. But to your point, then, the family and the community are outraged because he was stopped for not wearing a seatbelt. So somehow, because it was a minor traffic pretextual stop, I guess.
Yes, that is that correct terminology.
And if you remember, in preparing to talk to you, I was reading back through some articles from 2021 about departments that were going to stop having their officers do pretextual stops. So that's like for broken taillight. That's mm-hmm. for
license plate not illuminated. My favorite.
Right. The scented thing in the back window. But the implication is, and what they say is, those kinds of stops disproportionately target Black and brown men. And then what happens is those minor traffic stops turn into death. Like if you get pulled over for something minor, the police are going to kill you. Right? That's the thinking. But so, then sometimes these stops are actually used to find this guy was a felon with a gun, which I believe the officers knew. Right? So sometimes those stops are used to get to a more dangerous person.
Mm-hmm.
But that is also what the uninformed community people don't understand, is we do need to get to the bad guy. Is that making any sense?
Absolutely. And I tell people the reason that the logic's not there and that people think it's disproportionate is because if you have an area like the West End in Louisville where it's majority Black people, well, guess what? That's also where a majority of the violent crime is. So you're going to be chasing violent crime in that area, and those are the tactics you're going to use. But if you have in the white side of town out here, the rich upper scale part of town, the East End, can you use those taxes out there? Absolutely. Are there scumbags? Absolutely. But that's not where a majority of the crime is. You go where the crime is. You put your assets in the area with the highest gun violence, the highest homicide rates, the highest robbery rates. So why would I put a majority of my officers out in the East End at the higher tax bracket out there when there's crime to find, but not as much? And that area is not being impacted by it as much as the other area. And so that makes sense. I tell people, it's not that they're targeting Black people. They're targeting where the crime is, which just happens to be in the lower social economic part of the city. And you can attribute that to redlining, slavery, whatever you want, yo. But I mean, the fact of the matter is, cops go where the crime is, yo. And I heard people, you don't police like this out in the 8th Division. You don't police like this in the 8th End. I don't. I don't have to. You know, right. But like I said, I know cops that have gone out there and do it, and guess what? It works. You know, yeah. Like I said, we're not targeting people. We're targeting crime-ridden areas.
Right.
And right. So unfortunately, people, like I said, racism gets used as a blanket excuse for everything. And it's like, no, it's not the case, man. And the thing is, the people that live in these neighborhoods kind of want more cops.
Right.
Their cousins and friends are being killed every other weekend. Houses getting shot up. Of course they want more police officers. But like I said, that's the fringe movement that's telling people, we don't want police out here. That one person don't speak for everybody, man. There's a lot of good people down there. Most of the people in these places are just good, honest, hardworking Americans in a struggle, just like most of us right now. And everybody wants the same thing at the end of the day. They want to be able to come home, not pay a lot in taxes, and they want their families to be safe. And they want to feel safe and secure in their home and keep more money. Like, we all agree with that at the end of the day is important. But for some odd reason, we keep dragging race into it. Like rich people don't want their kids to be well and prosper. Black people want the same thing. You know, rich people don't want crime in their neighborhood. Black people don't want the crime in their neighborhood. Black people don't want their stuff getting stolen. Rich white people don't want their stuff getting stolen. You know, it's just the same, but it's just, like I said, I'll get off into the rabbit trail going down that road.
My fear is that when every story on the news is about a cops shooting at black guys, you know, even in this Dexter Reed incident, as we said, if you read the headlines are all officers shoot, you know, 96 times. It's not he tried to kill them. So my fear is that young black men believe that if they're going to get pulled over mm-hmm. by the police, they're going to get killed.
Yes.
And so it is almost a disservice to promote this kind of thinking. It makes it, it wouldn't that influence you then to be afraid of the police? I mean, right? I see you nodding, so I'm saying something right.
Absolutely. So, I mean, but this is what you have to look at. Black people have a history and a trauma in this country from slavery and from after slavery, Jim Crow era, the civil rights era. So if you have a family history, like my family from Mississippi, like my grandparents and my parents literally picked cotton growing up, literally in the racist, you know, Jim Crow South. So when you have this family that tells their young black sons, hey, the police are after you because you're black, which was legit back then, probably. Right. Now, that probably was legit back then. Well, that kid has kids. What do you think he's going to tell his kids? Can't trust right. the police. Then go up a couple generations where we're at now. Right. That has been preached right. since the beginning of this family because that has been the experience, even exactly. though the reality of that has changed, Joe, and it's not the case, Joe, but that's still being passed down because of family, right. because of trauma that black people have suffered in this country. I mean, it ain't right. just black people. I mean, it's take any minority community or any low income family. They all have the same experience almost, man, regardless of skin color. Yo. So right. it's a more of a social problem. Yo. But I mean, the reason that the news puts these stories out, because it's what gets everybody going. It gets all the right. looks and attention. Nobody wants to see cops delivering bicycles to a young black kid that got his bike stolen. I've seen that story more times than I've seen cops shooting anybody. I've seen right. cops do some phenomenal things, yo, but that ain't what the people want.
Yeah. It's the media it's in the my media. Mind.
Yeah. It's and yes, if it bleeds, it leads. And like right. I said, all this stuff is created to cause division within a country. And that's why I tell people I'm not being a conspiracy. I really believe that the media apparatus in our country, it's slowly to divide us. I mean, if you could do a story on that, why can't you do a positive story on the flip side, you know, to show right. the humanity and the good side of our officers, Joe? But it's always the extreme story. Everybody knows the name of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and all these other, but nobody knows the name of little Ray Ray that was shot at 32 in Broadway, just going to get his mom some milk from the store. Nobody right. know that name, but we know all the big names because that's where all the attention gets garnished. And like I said, that puts all the negative attention on the cops. And it just reinforces what young black men in this country believe. And you, like I said, you ask a young black kid, they'll tell you they really think that black people are killed by the thousands in this country by cops.
Right.
And it's not even close. It's not even a fourth of like 0.1% of that. It's crazy. Right. But in reality, in their mind, that's what they're taught.
And I do want to acknowledge that the reason that people think this way is that it has happened. I mean, I can't diminish the fact that there are black men who have been mistreated.
Absolutely.
And people, let's just say people who, and so I am not minimizing that there is legitimately that experience, as you just yeah. said.
I can't remember. I think it's the officer Flager shooting in North Carolina or South Carolina where he shoots the black dude in the back as he's running, and then he walks up to the guy and throws his taser down. And I'm just like, bro, what a... Oh, yeah, I'm yeah. like, man, I hope yeah, they yeah. throw this cop under, like, the death penalty.
Right, right. The officer shoots and then plants his taser to make it look like the guy tried to use it on him.
Yeah, yeah. And I was like, and people see that, and I'm like, that's one incident.
Right.
And they take that one incident, and it's everybody.
Right, exactly. You did leave LMPD. You're at with a smaller agency. You're correct. Still in the Louisville area. And you left LMPD because?
I saw the writing on the wall with where the department was going. And the LMPD I left in 2018 was not the same LMPD I came back to in 2020. 2020 damaged it. And the people that were in command there that loved on me and did all the stuff for me were gone. And it's a new breed of officer and a new breed of commander. And like, I'm not going to say that they're bad officers or bad commanders, yo, but I just don't agree with the direction that they're steering the ship. and I don't want no part of it. I don't believe in DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. I don't believe in forcing that on officers. That's just something that happens naturally. Oh, and I remember before I left, they sent out an email to all Black officers eligible to take the sergeant's test. Yo, and like, they're going to give them all these materials and groups to get and help them study to become sergeants because their goal was to promote Black officers in command. Yo, and I'm like, I'm like, and I was just, that's, I don't like that. I'm like, how about just because you're Black, as a Black officer, don't mean you're going to make a great sergeant. Like, that means nothing to me, but they're so focused on that. And then, you know, the DOJ is here now, the DOJ is in town. And I was just like, man, but, and everything you do is scrutinized so heavily because everybody's afraid to do the wrong thing. Yo, and just, I mean, and I can just see the stress on my sergeant's face. It's like, I've never seen stress on a sergeant's face before. And lieutenant, because if there's something they miss and somebody else picks it up, that sergeant's getting it now and he's in trouble. Yo. So it's a complete, the system's broken and flawed. I mean, I think right now in the academy, they only have like 12 people. It's short. Yo. And when I just, I was like, man, I want no part of this. If like, I'm going to be the police, I'm going to police. And that's going to be the, one of the chapters of my next book is where you work, where you work matters, because this is still a great job. And people say it's not worth it. When I hear them say being a cop's not worth it, I'm like, is the Constitution worth it? Because that is everything our job is predicated on. And to me, it's still worth it. So I'm not going anywhere because I believe in what we do. I believe in this profession, and this profession is still needed. We need cops now more than ever. We need good cops now more than ever. Phenomenal cops more than ever. You know, and I just, like I said, I worry for the country. Like early said, where we're going, I don't know where we're going. But I know I don't like the current direction we're going. And I know that we need a change of course, man. And we need good men and women. And I want to be a solid example of what it is to be a cop in this day and age, regardless of all the crap that's facing us right now.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're there. I'm glad you're a cop.
I love it.
We need you. We need you.
I love it.
So in closing, tell us about your next book.
So hopefully this one doesn't take 7 years, yo, but I after the first book, it was such a long process and I kind of got screwed over on it. And it kind of soured me on it because the guy that did my editing and proofreading did a horrible job and screwed me over. So if you do read the book, there's tons of errors, people, because the guy literally just pissed me off. And I have nothing good to say about the dude, but you know, lesson learned. So this next book, I said I wasn't going to write another one because it was so tedious, but I want to do something for the profession to encourage people to get into the profession and encourage people to, when they get into this profession, do the best to pump the profession up and encourage good people to come in. And I kept thinking about it. It just kept coming to me, man, like my dreams and like just everything I do every day. And I'm seeing cops do great things. And that's when I came up with the title. It's Still Noble, Still Needed, A Profession in Crisis. I just want to talk about where we're at in law enforcement, how we got here, and like I said, where we're going, what we need to do to get better. I want to try to have it done within a year or two, because I really think it'll be something good for the profession and good for the people of America to kind of give them hope and restore that honor that we had in the profession and people to look at us like we're humans and just realize, man, we're all in this together. You know, I mean, we're cops, but we're people, man. We have bills, you know, like we don't like being told what to do. You know, I know what it's like to have a cop take you out your car and pull you out your house. It ain't fun, you know, and it sucks, man. But like I said, we're all people having a human experience here on this earth. And the sooner we stop fighting over all this racial crap and garbage and stop listening to the media, and like I said in my first book, get out the house, go walk down the street and talk to people. You will see that not everybody's a racist. Not everybody's a cop hater, and not everybody's scheming and scanning to hurt you and kill you and take your money from you.
Well, you are a breath of fresh air. You are an inspiration.
Thank you. I appreciate you. I like what you do here. Like I say, you get our stories out, and we need good people like you to tell these stories. The stories you share of officers on your podcast, just, man, and especially the guys in Seattle and Portland, like, my God, they don't get enough credit. Because what we had in 2020, they've been dealing with like constantly for the last few years. Like we watch all the videos on the riots. Like we got our, we started a bicycle response team in Louisville and we based it off of Seattle's bicycle team. You know, crazy. And I was just like, man, because y'all are the blueprint for all that.
Yeah, Seattle PD's bike team is top notch for sure. And as you say, they've been a model for departments around the country. And as you say, they've had a lot of practice. Well, where can people find you? I want to make sure they know where to get I Am Pitts, where to find the podcast, where to find you.
So I'm on iampitts.com, the website. You can get the book on there, or just go to Amazon and type in I Am Pitts, and book pops up. Man, the book's like, I think, $3 or $4. The price constantly changes, yo. So if you, I tell people, if you want a signed copy, you can buy from me. It's $20. But if you want to just buy the book for cheaper and send it to me, and I'll sign it to you and send it back, man, it's... I'm not out here trying to make a killing, and I'm just trying to share with people a good story and give people hope and let people see a different side of police officers in 2020 that nobody talks about, because like literally I'm the only officer, active officer in the country that went through 2020 that has written a book about what it was like in 2020. Yeah. And like I said, I wrote this book while I was active on LMPD. So when everybody was kind of being quiet and not talking and kind of going to the shadows, I was like, nah, player. It's like, I fought for this country. Guess what? I'm going to express my opinion. And nobody said anything to me about it, which was crazy. I was expecting to get pulled to the chief's office. Yo, but like I said, I didn't write the book from a negative perspective. I was trying to give cred to the police department and the officers. But nobody said anything, you know, so it just kind of went away. But
why do you think that is? Because a lot of people don't know that an active officer really isn't generally allowed to be doing podcasts or writing books. So how did you get away with that?
Man, I don't know. Part of me thinks it because they were so focused on black this and black that, that we can't tell a black man to be quiet in 2021. You know, we can't tell him, hush, who gave this Negro permission to speak and write a book? You know, so I think it would be a bad look on their end, because that would have been the best thing to happen to me. I would have gone to Fox News and CNN, be like, yeah, I'm a black officer. I wrote a book, and they're trying to hush me about the truth of 2020. But they didn't do that, so they let me go. But like I said, I used to speak up about where I work at in Louisville Metro, where I worked. I don't do that so much now, because where I work, my chief is phenomenal. Shout out to Chief, man. I'm not going to say his name, but he tells me just be careful. And I don't reveal where I work out of respect for him. So I'm definitely like careful with the podcast. Like I said, I have the I Am Pitts podcast. I'm about a month and a half behind, because I tell people I'm a cop, I'm a father, a baseball coach, like Sunday school teach. I mean, I got a lot going on, but I do the podcast. I'm trying to get back into doing that. And also I'm on Instagram at I Am Pitts One, the number one, I Am Pitts One on Instagram. Follow me on there. Got the Facebook page, man. I'm all over the place. Just getting on TikTok. So you look up I Am Pitts on TikTok, man, I'm there. And so I'm not dancing. Not making any cringy videos.
I liked those dance videos.
Oh, I can't do it, man. I can't. I made a video of like, I was in the gym the other day and I bench pressed 315 three times, you know, and I was like, I'm going to try to make one of these videos. And I put the army music in the background and I watched it. I was like, this is cringy, man. And I deleted it. I'm 40 years old. And so I'm. Understand that social media. I mean, I've been around social media since I was like my mid 20s. So, but I just don't want to be an influencer. I'm just a guy with an opinion and some real life experience. And I like meeting people and chatting with people and encouraging people and sharing people, you know, my story. And so hopefully people hear this and, you know, hopefully you go get the book and read it for yourself. You have questions, reach out to me, you know, email me at iampitts@yahoo.com. I'm open. Like I said, I just love chatting with people and I love my fellow officers, man. Hey, and the people that have been in the struggle that are still here 4 years later after 2020, hey, congratulations. Yeah. I love y'all. We made it, man. We still going, man. We ain't going nowhere.
Okay. Well, on that, Dexter Pitts, thank you for joining me.
Absolutely. Abby, I appreciate you so much. I wish you the best of luck on your platform and everything you got.
Thank you. Thank you. It means a lot to me. I want to thank Dexter for his time in recording these episodes. Links to everything he mentioned, including his website and social media, will be in the episode notes. And as he said, you can buy his book on his website and on Amazon. Links to all my social media and my email are also in the episode notes. Please feel free to reach out. I truly appreciate each of you who listens. I want to note that I will be discussing the Dexter Reed case in more detail in an upcoming episode with Daniel Carr of Police Law News. So please keep an eye out for that. Again, thanks for tuning in.